Our next speaker is Paula Kaplan. She's the author of They Say You're Crazy, How the World's Most Powerful Psychiatrists Decide Who's Normal, and The Myth of Women's Masochism, Don't Blame Mother. Paula is an activist against the harm caused by psychiatric labels and has been a full professor of psychology, assistant professor of psychiatry, and lecturer in women's studies at the University of Toronto. She was chosen by the American Psychological Association as an eminent woman psychologist. Paula Kaplan.
Thank you. Just to correct a couple of things, The Myth of Women's Masochism is one book, and a separate book is Don't Blame Mother, although mothers get blamed for The Myth of Women's Masochism too, I suppose. Also, I'm happy to say I'm living in Cambridge, Massachusetts now. Now, I am a raving feminist, and one of the best things I ever heard in the women's movement was Gloria Steinem always says that no meeting should ever end without some decision to take some sort of action. And I think that can be just stopping people from using words like crazy too freely, stopping people from telling quote-unquote jokes about people who are in emotional pain. And I'd like to suggest that we think about small actions, everyday actions, as Gloria says, what does she say, something acts, what is it, small acts and everyday rebellions? What's her book? Any other? All right, anyway, something like that. And think about small things we can do as well as the things on a larger scale. I am so happy to be here. I love Mind Freedom, and I love Washington College of Law. My daughter went here. It was a pleasure to teach here. Of all the academic institutions I've ever set foot in, this is the one that has the largest proportion of marvelous teachers, brilliant teachers, and teachers who are utterly dedicated to their students and to human rights, like Bob Dinnerstein. So yes. Now I just want to say a couple of things because I know people are full of that delicious food and you're probably getting tired. I want to tell you about a couple of experiences I've had recently. I was asked by the book Our Bodies, Ourselves. There's a new edition that has just come out, like just right now, and it's got a lot of wonderful stuff in it. I was asked if I would write the chapter on emotions, and they've called it emotional well-being. I asked them to call it emotional problems because well-being is just a little up for what a lot of people go through. All of these chapters turn out to be to have input from huge numbers of people. But they have a website. I would like to urge you to look at the chapter on emotional well-being and look at what's on their website in terms of mental health issues and get in touch with them. Respond to the web designer. Some of the stuff is great. Some of the stuff is appalling. And I'm trying to get the bad stuff off and get more good stuff on. And if anybody has any suggestions about articles, references, websites that could be added there, please let me know or let them know directly. I knew you were going to ask that. It's I think it's ourbodiesourselves.org. I'll email the announcement list, but also if you Google, and do Our Bodies, Ourselves, I know you'll get there. One of the things one of the things that was wonderful was Judy Norsijan, who is just really dedicated to making it a really wonderful and helpful book to consumers. But one of the difficult things was there's a new book out. It's about a year old called The Complete Women's Guide to Mental Health. Has anybody seen that? Complete Women's Guide to Mental Health. Lauren Slater, Lauren Slater, who writes about Prozac and other things. She's one of the co-editors. Amy Banks, who's an MD, and another feminist psychologist. And I thought, oh, isn't this great? This is going to be like Our Bodies, Ourselves, but about mental health issues. Well, I opened it at random. There are all these articles by different people. And there's one on depression. And does anybody here want to guess, what do they say is the best treatment for depression? Electroshock.
I won.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was from Leonard Roy Frank, actually, that I learned at one of the ICSPP meetings that you don't call it electroshock therapy. And believe me, I tell everybody that whenever I hear that with the word therapy used with electroshock. Also, they talk about post-traumatic stress disorder in that chapter. Most of the chapter, it looks like one of those Zoloft commercials. It's got little pictures of neurons, you know, and all of that stuff. And the message is very clearly stated that, you know, talking to people, therapy may help, social support may help, but medication is what you really need. That's what's essential if you've been traumatized, because you've got to correct that neurochemical change. So that's a book that especially a lot of feminists are just, you look at the title and you think, oh, this is fabulous. So I just urge you to warn people against that. Another thing related that came up for me in working on the Our Bodies Ourselves material was that I wrote a section on forced outpatient commitment. And it was David Oakes, whom I heard say at an ICSPP conference. I remember, actually, it still makes my heart stop. I remember he looked out at everybody and he said, you need to know that the government has the right to make your home into a ward, every one of you. And I tell people that all the time. I quote that. Now, so I wrote this section to go in the book. And they took it out and they said, well, you know, it's not really very relevant for very many people. And I said, that's what you think. But it's not in there. I think there's a little tiny reference to it, but there's a section on the website that was not the one I wrote. And oh my God, if I didn't know about what the truth was about forced outpatient commitment, I would have no idea how dangerous it was. So I'm in the process of trying to get them to change that. But it's just a great opportunity. So many people will go to this website to get important information there. So please, you can get in touch with me or with them. Also, I want to mention a couple of other things. I started working on stuff about diagnosis in 1985, and I have gotten increasingly frustrated with the lack of response of the American Psychiatric Association. I don't know what I expected. Recently, last fall, I started doing this thing that I'd been thinking about doing for years, because I think lawsuits are going to be one of the best ways to stop these people. And the other is congressional hearings as a form of public education, airing some of the problems with psychiatric diagnosis. And although there's been so much wonderful work recently exposing the drug companies' fraudulent claims and the dangers that they conceal from people of what might happen to you that's bad if you take psychotropic drugs, one of the problems with that has been that so many members of the public think, oh, the problem in the mental health system is drugs. That's it. The problem is drugs. And now isn't the FDA taking care of that, putting little black box warnings on things? So I've been concerned because increasingly over the years, after I wrote They Say You're Crazy, more and more people will call me and they'd say, you know, you mentioned in the book some things that had happened to people that were devastating because of just getting a psychiatric diagnosis, but here's what happened to me, and you didn't have that in there. And I have been horrified by the variety and the range of awful ways that people's lives have been damaged or destroyed just because of getting a psychiatric diagnosis. So I sent out, this was a, you know, it was certainly a one person thing at the beginning. One day I just sent out a letter to just some people on my email list, just some people, not even everybody, saying, do you want to co-endorse a call for congressional hearings about psychiatric diagnosis? We had held two congressional briefings, courtesy of Congresswoman Slaughter and 12 women's health groups in 2002 and 2003, and some legislative aides came and they said that was very interesting, and then, of course, nothing happened. So congressional hearings are so much more public that it's much easier to get media attention and therefore public education. So that's why I was aiming for hearings. Well, The endorsements started pouring in and came in over a period of months. I finally had to say, stop, thank you, that's enough, I can't handle anymore. I was soliciting first-person stories or stories about something that happened that was awful to somebody that you cared about or knew about, and bless you. And then I thought, well, what am I going to do with all these? Well, God bless Jim Gottstein. He created a website. I would never have known how to do that. And then this angel named Leora Turcosi, who's in Wyoming, who's never been involved in the mental health system, decided she would learn how to do websites, and she created this beautiful website. And it's called psychdiagnosis.net. P-S-Y-C-H, diagnosis.net. And about a month ago, we sent out a press release referring people to the website. There are copies of the press release on one of the tables out there. I'd urge you to take them. Send them to media people, send them to your legislators. It gives the website, it tells that the website has these 53 stories about people who were harmed. And the next step, of course, is to make the hearings happen. And so, boy, do I want to talk to you later, because I don't know very much about how to make that happen. Although we're working on some things. And then the last thing I want to do is tell you. When I get frustrated, I sort of switch to another mode. And so, when I was frustrated. With the lack of movement within the mental health system. A few years ago, I decided, well, I'm going to write a play and about it. So I wrote a play called Call Me Crazy. It's a comedy drama about is anybody normal and who gets to decide. And what happens is that there are four therapists in a case conference room. And these are very realistic scenes, and they're talking about patients. And there are four people in hospital gowns who are the mental patients, and the therapist can't see them. That's symbolic. And they're listening to, they can see the therapist, and they're listening to what the therapists are saying. And every time there's something the therapists just aren't getting through their heads, the patients get frustrated, and they run out, and they do a little something, some sophomoric thing. You know, like they do a quiz show called What's My Diagnosis? And they do songs and dances and so on. And in any case, there's one other character, and she's been watching the whole thing and just despairing at how slow the therapists are to understand what they need to understand about what's helpful to people who are suffering. And finally, she can't remain quiet any longer, and she walks down to the front of the stage, and this is somebody we never got to hear from before. And here's what she says. She looks at the audience and she says, "Thank you for coming. I'm Amalia Freud, Amalia Nathanson Freud. I lived to be 95 years old. I wanted people to know that my son was the great psychoanalyst, but behind their polite smiles, I saw the thought, this is the mother whose son discovered that all little boys want to have sex with their mothers. Discovered, ha! And about girls and their mothers, what did he discover? That our daughters resent us for not having had the courtesy to provide them with a penis. I had five daughters. How do you think his words made me feel? I love my Sigmund, but this is too much. He told people he felt all his life like a conqueror because he was my indisputable favorite. So he thought. The truth is, I adored all my children. How could I not? Sigmund was my firstborn. I loved my daughters also, but kept having to have more. Five in all, until Jacob got one more son. Most of the time Sigmund was growing up, his father and all the other children and I shared three bedrooms, but he had his own. He needed to study. He complained that his sister Anna's piano lessons were noisy when he was trying to study. We got rid of the piano. Anna and I were sad, but not angry. We understood.
Maybe he had too much. And he decided who was normal. You know, he threw up his hands and said, "What do women want?" What's not to understand? Is it healthy to take a wife's love or a mother's love and make it seem so complicated? Normal schmormal. Oh, I realize some people may have to be put away so they won't hurt themselves or someone else. But it's a tough problem. You start putting people away, and somebody's going to decide who gets put away. Somebody's going to choose the rules. Is what these guys decide today any better than what my son decided? Not thinking about it makes my head hurt. But I tell you what I have noticed. Who decides is who has the power. And somehow they seem to decide the people most like them are the normal ones, the good, the healthy, the deserving. It's the others who are derided, called dangerous, sent away. My five daughters, one came to New York. Three were gassed at Auschwitz. And the last one starved to death in the camp at Theresienstadt. Thank you for listening. And then she leaves. Thank you.